Hello, everyone. We're going to go ahead and get started. Thanks so much for joining us today for CCL's Big Tent Climate Talks. This conversation is a relatively new and engaging monthly series we're hosting that spotlights diverse leaders in the climate community. At CCL, we know that solving climate change requires a variety of policies and perspectives. This is why we do this work under a big tent. That includes folks from the right, the left, and every spot in between. In our Big Tent Climate Talk episodes, we'll talk to a wide variety of climate leaders outside of Citizens Climate Lobby to learn more about how we can all work better together. So for starters, hi, I'm Kyle Kameen, and I'm CCL's Senior Business Relations Representative in the DC office. My work focuses on building the coalition of businesses and industry partners in our Big Tent. Overall, our DC team keeps a pulse on what other organizations are doing and finds ways that CCL can collaborate with or work with them. It is my hope that our session today gives you a taste of how our team's conversations with other organizations go. For our episode today, CCL is pleased to be hosting a conversation with Dr. Jessica Moorman, who is the Senior Director for Science and Policy at the Evangelical Environmental Network. But before we get started, because today's program is more of a back and forth conversation than a one-way presentation, it might feel a little different than the typical talks we host. I just want to make a few gentle reminders. As CCLers, we love our focus and we're open-minded. So today's focus is on listening to and learning from the experience of fellow climate advocates and other groups. If you bump into a moment or a reaction where someone shares something that you feel or think differently about, really lean into that, see it as an opportunity to learn about the larger climate movement and better understand a different perspective. In that vein, building support for the policy that we support, the Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act, we know that it will require the biggest and broadest coalition possible, and that is the reason we want to host conversations like this one. Learning from each other and working together is how we can get the job done. So with that, I will introduce today's guest. Dr. Moorman received her PhD in Earth and Atmospheric Sciences from the Georgia Institute of Technology and has held research positions at Johns Hopkins University, University of Michigan, and the Smithsonian National Museum of Natural History, where she researched how climate has changed throughout Earth's history. Jessica previously served as an AAAS Science and Technology Policy Fellow at the U.S. Department of Energy. She is passionate about leading church communities towards positive solutions to safeguard our cities, neighborhoods, and the next generation from the effects of a warming world, and has been featured on the NBC Today Show, The Washington Post, Christianity Today, and numerous podcasts. In her spare time, Jessica volunteers at her church, which she co-founded in 2016 together with her husband, Chris, in the DuPont Circle neighborhood of Washington, D.C. And I will just add, that sounds like a lot, so I don't know how she has a whole lot of spare time. But if Jessica, is there anything that you would like folks on this call to know about you that I might have missed or that you just would like to share?
Oh, well, no, Kyle, I think that really covers it. I just would like to share that it is a real honor to be here with you. Thank you, Kyle, and thank you to the CCL community.
Well, thank you so much. That's great. We feel very fortunate to have you as our guest for this month's Big Tent Climate Talk. We really appreciate having somebody from EEN, since both of our organizations, you know, recognize the power of how a well-designed carbon prices can effectively reduce carbon emissions, and that we are working together from this policy at different angles, but trying to accomplish the same goals. So with that, I'm going to transition into our conversation so I can stop doing all the talking. I tend to do that. Also for the audience, don't worry, we're going to save some time at the bottom of the hour for audience Q&A, but for this first part, I'll be asking Dr. Moorman for her perspectives and experiences with some questions that we've queued up to guide the conversation. So with that, Jessica, could you tell us a little bit about how you got into the climate movement and kind of what started that for you?
Sure. Well, I really trace my entry point into the climate movement back to my Christian faith, back to my hometown church, back to growing up in the foothills of the Great Smoky Mountains in East Tennessee. And growing up in that environment, I was never spoiled for opportunities to get involved, get out in nature, see God's beautiful creation. But I will say some folks are surprised when they hear that I became a climate scientist, got involved in the climate movement because of my faith. I'm hoping that as time goes on, that becomes less and less surprising. That is really one of my passions and my missions of that being seen of working on climate action, being in the climate movement, and being a Christian as being fully compatible, but it still surprises people sometimes. But as I said, yeah, growing up in East Tennessee, my father, he was a hunter, and he would never describe himself as an environmentalist, but he always said that hunters are among America's greatest conservationists, and really showed me that ethic of environmental stewardship. And then also growing up in my church, even though speaking on environmental stewardship wasn't a big emphasis there, one thing that was asking, a big question in my youth group was, what is your calling from God? We're all called to follow Jesus, serve God, love our neighbors. But what was that special assignment, that special way that you were going to live that out? And I was so struck by that question, especially as a senior in high school, and looking at what I was going to study in college and just really asking God, how can I serve you and love my neighbor? And what was really surprising to me was I felt like he was leading me to do that through geology, through studying geology. And that was really confusing for me at that time. I'd always been fascinated by nature, fascinated by his creation, but I didn't know how I could serve him and love others through geology. And also, I was a little worried, can I even be a Christian and a scientist? And so I found myself sharing this struggle and this uncertainty with a youth leader in my church. And he patiently listened to me. And at the end, he said, Jessica, don't you know that I'm a geologist? And my jaw just hit the floor. I had no idea. I didn't know there was a scientist in our church community, let alone a geologist. But God put that right person in my path to show me that I could trust and be obedient to that calling that God was putting on my heart. And so whenever it came to go off to college, I took the plunge, became a geology major, still didn't know what that connection was between serving God and loving others through geology. But I didn't have to wait very long. In one of my freshman geology classes, we had a section on climate change, and specifically how do we study climate, what climate was like in the past using the rock record. And it was in that moment that in science class that Jesus's greatest commandment to his followers, to love God, to love your neighbor as yourself, that really hit home. And I saw the connection between that, between climate change, studying climate science, and that the most vulnerable and overlooked in society are impacted first and worst by climate change and are the least responsible. And that just struck me as so unfair. And it really then set that trajectory that where it all clicked together, that through climate science, by joining the climate movement, I could live out that core tenet of my Christian faith and also serve others and love my neighbors as myself. And that set the trajectory for me to become a climate scientist, and my passion with helping spread that perspective amongst the Christian community. And that's really, really guided my engagement then to come on board with the Evangelical Environmental Network. And so that was my entry point into it all.
Well, thanks so much for sharing that. And I think what strikes me about your story is that regardless of your faith, we can all understand, regardless of our faith individually, we can all appreciate that climate change does affect everyone to some degree. And it is about how we are caring for one another and coming together as a community to solve this crisis. And so I just, that's really what strikes me from your story. So, you know, in that vein, and having come on board at EEN and doing this important work, you know, what projects and areas of focus does EEN work on? And maybe there's one that you're specifically dedicated to, but also more broadly the organization.
Sure. So when it comes to our policy focus areas, we're grounded in and guided by scripture, but also informed by science. And so we're always asking the question, is the policy that we are working on, is it fair? Does it make sure that no one is left behind or comes out worse off? Is it just? Is it, does it engage in restorative justice, righting the wrongs of the past? And does it avoid danger? Does it defend life? Does it follow the best available scientific and medical research of defending life? And that's where our engagement really kind of falls into three buckets of defending life, which looks like addressing climate change and also addressing harmful pollution, protecting God's creation, where we look at natural climate solutions and conservation, as well as creating family sustaining jobs in the clean energy economy with a focus on a just transition and on environmental justice to make sure that those new good paying jobs go to communities that have been historically left out of the high wage energy economy. And so those are kind of the three buckets that we look at, but our vision at EEN is that every child have the hope and the expectation of a stable climate and a pollution-free world. And a lot of our work is centered on that defending life component. For us, we see creation care, acting on climate, reducing pollution truly as a matter of life. And we often focus on children's health specifically because what we found with our engagement, especially with engaging a community and an audience that has not been traditionally part of the climate movement, that a different message is needed. And what we found is most effective is when you make it hyper local, when you really help folks connect the dots between the things that they care most about and how climate, environmental degradation, pollution impacts those things. And so what we found is that children's health, caring for your children, caring for the well-being of your grandchildren, really hits home and really resonates. And I can tell you that, especially as a climate scientist, I didn't fully appreciate the harms of air pollution itself until I joined EEN and really until I became a mother myself. Because even though we can't see it, pollution, air pollution is not a problem of the past. It's still a problem of the here and now. What medical research shows is that 200,000 Americans each year die early from unhealthy air. And that number has really been put in perspective with the COVID-19 pandemic and the numbers of deaths that we're seeing now. We also see there's also a clear link in medical research between the health of children and especially unborn children. Mothers exposed to air pollution while they're carrying their child, it can lead to premature birth. It can lead to developmental delays, low birth weight, problems with brain development, and even stillbirth. And this is more true where we find that Black and brown mothers and babies are most at risk. We also see a link, medical research shows a link between asthma and severe allergies and air pollution. And so really bringing these this medical research to bear, showing that air pollution is not a problem of the past, and asking folks when we go and speak at churches, who do you know who has asthma? Who do you know, what children do you know with severe allergies? And being able to point that back to air pollution, and then point that back to the main source of that pollution is fossil fuel pollution. It's traffic emissions from gas-powered cars. It's from coal and natural gas emissions. Then we begin to see that can be that entry way into getting them also involved in climate action, because we find that that same source of carbon pollution is the same source of those harmful air pollutants that are harming the health of children from the very beginning all the way up to adults and cutting Americans' lives short every year. And so that's what we often focus on, of where can we get those win-win-win solutions of whether that's reducing methane leaks, whether that's transitioning to cleaner sources of energy, more renewables, and also looking at let's get more EVs on the road, which cuts back on that traffic pollution that exacerbates asthma attacks. Those are some of the policy areas that we really focus on. And that's where I see, whereas it's a common phrase that climate change is a threat multiplier, when we focus on those climate solutions is actually a benefit multiplier. We're able to both address the climate crisis as well as the pollution crisis at the same time.
That's such a great point. And I think, you know, as you're speaking it in my head, I'm thinking of all the ways that, you know, CCL's, you know, goals and vision align with what you were just laying out. And, you know, one of the things that you pointed out is, you know, how the solutions have additional benefits. You know, we talk about the health benefits as well. And I think that that can't be overstated for people's lives in general, but also especially like you pointed out their children. And additionally, you know, I think one of the things that we focus on as well is, you know, making sure that whatever economic transition has to happen, that people aren't left behind. Because we know that if, you know, for example, a price is regressive, that the people that were already the most impacted are going to be left further behind. And we have to ensure that that doesn't happen. So it's fascinating to hear you talk about EEN's work, because I think that we're just aligned in a lot of ways. And so speaking of that, you know, we've identified places where we're aligned, but what are some things that people assume about, you know, you or EEN and the work that EEN does that maybe aren't actually true, and how do you handle that?
Sure. Well, I'll answer this from two angles. I think we get two misconceptions that I've encountered myself, as well as that we often encounter at EEN. First, it's the assumption that evangelicals don't care about climate, don't care about environmental stewardship. And, you know, I'll be the first to admit that there's some good reasons for that assumption. But one thing I do want to point out is that I think that the 3 million evangelicals who've engaged with us at EEN to take action on climate solutions to reduce pollution really helps prove that that misconception simply isn't true for all evangelicals. The other assumption that I commonly encounter that isn't true is that many evangelical Christians, on the flip side, feel that evangelicals shouldn't care about climate and the environment. And but the truth is that being good environmental stewards is and caring for God's creation is actually not a radical new idea, but it's core to our Christian faith and our Christian witness. And one thing I like to point out is that call to be good environmental stewards is found throughout Scripture, from the very first book of the Bible to the very last, and all throughout the Old Testament as well as the New Testament. And not only is it found in Scripture, but we also see really clear examples in church history of Christians living out that call to be good environmental stewards that the Bible calls us to be. Examples from early church history. I love to point towards the Orthodox Ethiopian Church, which has been in existence since the fourth century. If you go and you look at their churches from a satellite view, they've been preserving and protecting the land around their church buildings for centuries. And these have now become really critical hotspots for biodiversity in a landscape where that's been lost, and now a critical areas for increasing and reclaiming, restoring those forests and biodiverse places on the land. We can look to more recent church history and American church history, whether that's the Puritans who put in place different local policies to protect the common lands and preserve them for the next generation, to even finding roots in the Presbyterian Church of guiding some of the foundations of the Department of Interior and how that got set up. We can find key theologians speaking about environmental stewardship as being key to the Christian faith, including John Calvin, John Wesley, who started the Methodist Church, even Billy Graham. And so that's what I really like to point out to other Christians who feel like it doesn't fit with our identity to be environmental stewards, to care about climate change. I like to point out not only that the strong scriptural basis, but the strong church history basis. And it's one of my passions and one of Ian's passions to break down that misconception and really help Christians rediscover and reclaim that biblical mandate that we have to be good stewards of all that God has made.
That's terrific. And the historical context, I just personally like history. So the historical context is fascinating. And I have to say, I wasn't aware of the 3 million number that you said of that have engaged with EEN. And that's a really impressive number. So I just wanted to plug that. That's really terrific. That said, what is EEN doing, today or this week or this month for Earth Week to kind of push the narrative on your work?
Yeah, so Earth Week is a great week to engage, just as I know that you at CCL have found as well. And one of the key opportunities that we like to leverage from Earth Week, and we often call it Creation Care Week, but using this as a point of opportunity for our members who are actively engaged to leverage their own social connections, social networks, to get them talking about creation care. And again, rediscovering that call to us by God to be good stewards, good environmental stewards. And so one of the opportunities that we're taking advantage of to help our active members gather others in their church, in their families, in their communities, recognizing them as the best messengers to their families and friends, is we are putting on a film festival, a film series, actually starting next week, not to to free up the schedule since Earth Week is a busy, busy week. And just having this opportunity where they can invite their friends and family to view a film about climate change, about environmental stewardship, and have conversations. So really creating those conversation starters. We also host a book club series annually through different quarters. And so are always looking for those different opportunities to help our members start that critical conversation that they may feel hesitant to have, but providing those opportunities are really great. And I know that CCL just does a great job of that as well, of empowering all of us. You don't have to be a climate scientist to share the word about climate change, that you as yourself is the best messenger to reach your family and your friends.
Absolutely. And you're right that first conversation is often the most difficult. Kind of opening the door to that conversation can be challenging. So it's important that we all provide, our organizations provide as many tools to help our members do that as possible. That said, what are some of your thoughts on how CCL and EEN can best be in the movement, the climate change movement together, or what are some ways that you think CCL could be most helpful in EEN's efforts?
Absolutely. Well, I have to say, I'm a huge fan of CCL, and I'm a huge fan of your ethos and your commitment of starting from a place of mutual respect and finding those common values with whoever you're speaking with. And I always say, you rarely change anyone's mind and on any topic in a conversation if you start with a poke in the eye. And CCL, you all are so good at really finding that common ground, starting from that place of respect. And that really fits with what we strive to do at EEN as well. And especially to bring those who aren't traditionally seen as part of the climate movement into the fold, into that big tent of reaching out to conservatives, reaching out to other people of faith, and really helping them see those, connect those dots between what they value and the urgency of acting on climate, and then providing those tools, resources, and opportunities to get engaged and feel like you have agency in it all. And that's where I see that CCL has been such so effective at, and so important in the climate movement, and something that would love to continue to engage with you all on doing that as well. And I think our groups also both really value bipartisanship and nonpartisanship. And I can just tell you, I'm working towards that day when climate solutions and acting on climate is seen as a nonpartisan issue, where it's an issue that all Americans, no matter your political ideology, see as central to making sure that we have that better future that our children deserve. And so Ian, and that's one of our missions to do. And I know that CCL is so effective at doing that as well. And so, yeah, just really thrilled to continue to work with you all on bringing more folks into the fold.
Yeah, and I know I speak for the organization when I say we couldn't agree more that, you know, the big tent is the way that we get to that nonpartisan definition of climate change, where we can acknowledge that it is a problem for everyone, regardless of a party affiliation or belief, and that we need to work together to address it. And so, and that's why I'm so glad that you could be here today, because that's the goal here. So, you know, kind of dialing it in a little bit more to carbon pricing, if you will. Jessica, what are EEN's, you know, thoughts on putting a rising price on carbon emissions and having a vehicle to return the revenue to households, such as a dividend? And, you know, if EEN had its druthers, what would be the ideal or preferred way of designing, you know, an ambitious, effective climate policy?
Yeah, well, we at EEN, we recognize that there's no silver bullet policy for climate solutions, but when you're looking at what tools are available in the toolbox, putting a price on carbon, and especially with returning dividends back to American households, it's hard to find a more powerful tool in the toolbox. And there are, so I know that I'm preaching to the choir here, so I'll just share some of the reasons why we at EEN really see that as one of the most effective tools in our climate toolbox, and why we support a carbon fee and dividend scheme. And first, it's that it does defend life. It avoids danger. It reduces carbon emissions at an economy-wide scale, which is really important. Not just taking a sector by sector approach, but a tool for reaching the whole economy and that whole pie of carbon emissions. That also effectively advances clean energy innovation and a transition to a clean energy future and economy, all while also reducing those harmful air pollutant levels that are needed not only to reduce avoid a dangerous climate change, but also to preserve the health of our children and of all of Americans. And the other reason why we really love it is it's both socially responsible as well as it's fiscally responsible. With the dividend back to households, it ensures that low-income, middle-class Americans don't bear that undue burden of shouldering the work of creating that clean energy future, especially working class families who've already been really hard hit by the pandemic. It's socially responsible also because it corrects that market failure where it's everyday people who do bear the cost of whether that's the health or environmental costs of carbon pollution. And so it puts that, it's socially responsible putting that cost back where it belongs at the polluter level. And we see it as fiscally responsible by raising revenues, by, again, essentially creating a user fee that if you choose to pollute, especially when there's so many other alternatives out there now for low emitting, zero emitting energy, transportation, you have it, there should be a cost and a fee to do that. And so, but most importantly, we really support it because it makes sure that everyday Americans aren't shouldering that cost as we transition to that clean energy future. And I'd say for us, our ideal proposal would look like full dividends going back to low-income, middle-class Americans. But then for those who are already well off, reserving those revenues to invest in the deployment of clean energy infrastructure. That's kind of our ideal proposal. But protecting the poor and middle class from those cost increases of creating that clean energy future that our children deserve, that is our top priority. And that's why we just are so thankful for CCL's work of putting that at the center of making sure that those dividends go back to American households.
And you're right, you're preaching to the choir there. I almost felt like I needed to stop nodding so much throughout as you made the case for, which I couldn't have made better myself. It's imperative that the solution ensures, again, that the solution ensures that those that are already kind of struggling aren't left further behind. So I've really enjoyed our conversation, and I'd love to keep asking you questions, but I'm going to pivot to our audience Q&A now. I have a few questions here that I'm going to jump into. So Jessica, the first one is, what are your thoughts on Laudato Si, on our care for our common home, the Pope Francis's second encyclical, and what do you see as the intersection between Catholics and evangelicals based on that writing?
There is such a strong intersection between evangelicals and Catholics, and I really applaud Pope Francis for putting that forward, Laudato Si, as one of his, if not the first, one of the first encyclicals that he wrote coming into the position of the head of the Catholic Church. It lays out that case for us to be good environmental stewards, for us to act on climate change, and climate change as a moral imperative, lays out that case so well. And I have to say that it made our job easier. And so I really, really appreciate that of, again, bringing that moral argument to mainstream media and conversations at such a high level, coming from someone as influential as Pope Francis. And so we often work with other Catholic environmental groups, with bishops. I was just on a dialogue last week between a bishop, a sister, our president of the National Association of Evangelicals, and myself, all having a dialogue on our call to be good stewards from both the evangelical as well as Catholic perspectives. And such a fruitful dialogue of how we can care from our common home, from our faith traditions, as well as just everyone's call just to love their neighbor.
It sounds like a kind of a faith community coalition that's able to come together and have that conversation, and that's phenomenal. So speaking of EEN and kind of its structure and what it looks like, does EEN have a local chapter structure or, you know, congregational chapters? And then, you know, further than that, what is like the age group demographic for EEN and the typical member look like?
Sure. So we have, in terms of age, at EEN, we typically engage with adult evangelicals, 30s and up. We have our sister organization, Young Evangelicals for Climate Action, who really focus on evangelical youth, college students, and the under 30s. And so we work closely together between EEN and Young Evangelicals for Climate Action. So really, all ages can get involved. In terms of what it looks like to get involved, we have right now several training programs of training up those local champions in our churches. So YECA has a climate fellows program training up evangelicals on college campuses to reach their campus for climate action. At EEN, we have our partners program, which is training church members to reach out to their church congregation and get them engaged in climate action and creation care. And all with the vision of eventually leading up to regional hubs and local chapters as well as denominational chapters. And so that's something that we are actively building and really excited about.
CCL can appreciate the effort that goes into, you know, chapter building and how much resource and help you want to provide to make sure that they're successful. You mean you want to do your best to help your members and volunteers be successful. So we can certainly appreciate the effort and time that goes into that. So speaking from, you know, outreach to other evangelicals, you know, it's clear that we all know that trusted messengers are critical in any conversation about an issue, but even particularly in the climate space. How does someone that is, you know, a random non-evangelical kind of agnostic activist help with EEN's outreach effort, though? How might they start a conversation in this context?
Absolutely. I think it's always great to point out examples, whether that's individuals or groups, who share that ethic of or faith tradition with whoever you're speaking with. So for evangelicals, please do name drop the Evangelical Environmental Network or Young Evangelicals for Climate Action. Catherine Hayhoe, of course, is a wonderful person to mention in those conversations. Name drop Billy Graham. You can find some great quotes from him on environmental stewardship and creation care. And so I think it's a great way, one, share your own personal story to begin with and find that common value. And again, I know at CCL, that is something that you really drive home and help train people in doing. But then, start pointing them towards those people and those organizations that they may have that message that really resonates with them. And I suggest that for all either faith traditions or other kind of affinities and areas of common interest. If it's skiing, point towards some skiers who have really made that case and so on and so forth.
Yeah, I think that your point about, sharing a personal story, I think the human element is so important in all of these conversations. You know, even in some of the work I do with the kind of more business coalition side, it's still the stories about people that matter to a member of Congress or their staff, right? They want to hear how their constituents are impacted. And so it's the same, no matter what context it's in, the human element is just incredibly important. Another question we have that's kind of in that vein, is how would you recommend engaging in the message of creation care, or even more specifically about solutions like the Energy Innovation Act, to those that maybe don't believe in the importance of climate action, something along those lines?
Yeah, and I guess I'll say the same thing. First, start with that personal story of why you care, how, and again, if you're a Christian, how you came to seeing that connection. Some handy scriptures, which you can, I won't go into them now, but you can find at our website at creationcare.org. And again, pointing to that common history. And one thing I like to point towards is kind of looking at things at two levels. First, we've got our individual actions that we can do, sharing what you're doing individually. And I like to frame it as in Genesis chapter 2, verse 16, God calls humans to work and tend the garden. What does that look like for you? What is the garden that God has entrusted to you? And how are you tending it through your own changes that you have implemented, whether that's buying a more fuel efficient car, switching to more energy efficient appliances, whatever it looks like, composting, share why you do that, how it's given life to you, and maybe some other benefits of how it's also helped you save money too, which always helps. Yeah. But you can share those personal actions that you're taking. And then share of how, again, how you can gather together with others to do action, whether that's through CCL and a local chapter. At EEN, we have action alerts that we send out to our EEN champions to get involved with contacting their congressmen and congresswomen about upcoming bills and helping them see how the things that they already care about, whether that's family, their family, whether that is their local community, whether there's a particular mission field that God has really inspired them to serve in, help them draw that connection between how climate impacts that and how climate solutions help them become more effective at whatever that mission or ministry or person, place that God's put on their heart, how that helps them become more effective by taking the dangers of climate change into account and how climate solutions help make them more effective at that mission.
That's really helpful. And thank you for sharing that insight. I'm sure our viewers will get a lot of good thoughts from that. A little bit of a pivot, but you know, what's at the top of your stack? What have you been reading of late or that you're about to read that you're really excited about and would recommend to others?
Absolutely. So this will be a little bit of a delayed being able to get in your own hands, but I just received an advanced copy of Catherine Hayhoe's new book, Saving Us, which has all of her tips and tricks of how she communicates with others and makes those connections between climate change and existing values. So I am just devouring that right now, feeling very lucky to have an advanced copy. But it's a really incredible book, incredible read. And I think it's on pre-order right now and will come out in September of this year. So definitely sign up for a pre-order. I can go ahead and tell you that it's a really, really wonderful book and something that I'm definitely drawing a lot of wisdom from right now.
That's excellent. We actually just shared the link for the book in the chat so people can hop on there and grab it if they have the opportunity or would like to. Thanks for sharing that. I'll have to put that on my list as well. Any final reflections or words of wisdom to share? We're getting close to closing time here.
Well, again, I just want to say thank you to CCL and to all the work that each of you all do in your local chapters of really getting the word out. It's, again, you guys organize people so, so well and provide those opportunities so well. It's a real inspiration. It makes such a difference. And so it's a real honor and joy to be able to partner with CCL, with all of you. And again, if you are looking for resources of reaching out to people of faith in your community, specifically evangelicals, be sure to check us out at creationcare.org.
Well, thank you so much, Jessica. I, on behalf of CCL, I cannot thank you enough for joining us today. This was an excellent conversation, and we are so happy to have EEN as a partner and, you know, working together to try to accomplish this big challenge that's ahead of us. But can't thank you enough for your time. You know, we've reached the 45-minute mark amidst our great conversation, so we're going to have to wrap up for today. To our audience, a happy Earth Day to everyone. In the chat, you'll see a brief reminder of where you can find today's recording to share with those who couldn't join us live, as well as our education director, Brett Cease's email, if you have any questions, comments, feedback. You'll also see the websites for both Citizens Climate Lobby and EEN if you'd like to get more involved and active. And additionally, the registration link for a sign up for future months of the talks. We will be back next month, the same time and place, fourth Thursday of the month at 3 p.m. Eastern. And stay tuned for who will be joining us. And thanks again, Jessica. EEN's doing such important work, and we're so thankful for having you today.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Citizens Climate Lobby's training program. You can tune into more episodes anywhere podcasts are available. Inspired by what you heard today? Join Citizens Climate Lobby to advocate for bipartisan climate solutions. Go to community.citizensclimate.org to find more trainings, resources, your local chapter, national action teams, discussion forums, and more. Be sure to like our Facebook page and follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Citizens Climate. We also invite all of our listeners to subscribe to our YouTube channel for more inspiration. And together, we are creating the political will for a livable world.